morning, ladies and gentlemen. My apologies for being late. We actually went to the wrong venue.
After you
told me the tax building, I went to, I don't call it that. I won't call it that. No, I won't call it that either. Yeah. Good morning and welcome to all of you. My apologies for being late. Mr. Jeffrey has got official business with the NCOP, so he's also going to be late. We've only got two items on the agenda. The first will be a presentation by the Auditor General's office, and we welcome Mr. Yusuf Isaac, who will make the presentation on behalf of the Auditor General's office. Once we're done with that, they will deal with a little matter of Magistrate Miles. Mr. Isaac, welcome. We're in your hands. You'll make your presentation, and then we'll take questions for clarity, and then comments as per usual.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, honorable members. We should all have, whether it's color or black and white, the detailed presentation, as well as just two other documents, the difference between AOPI, performance auditing, and technical indicator descriptions. It's not in any specific order, it's just, we just found material that might be useful to the committee to consider during the review. If we go to the slide, we can start on page 4, which talks about audits performed by the AGSA, the annual mandatory audits. Basically, our audit reports are broken down into three elements. I mean, the one we're all familiar with is the financial statements. The other is it's a requirement of the PSMA and the Public Audit Act, which is reporting on predetermined objectives. And the third area that we report on is on compliance with laws and regulations. That's where you find normally, typically, your supply chain management areas, etc. So, basically, that's a summary of the audit report, and ideally, we should be giving an opinion on each of those areas. However, in the audit report, you will only find an opinion on financial statements. We will come to now how we report on predetermined objectives. With respect to compliance, we just highlight key non-compliance areas that we've identified during the audit. But our focus for this presentation is on the report on predetermined objectives. Then we also have discretionary audits, for example, performance audits. And this is an area that the AG is taking on now more and more seriously. We've done the consultants audit. We're going into infrastructure. We're doing at other portfolios, for example, public works, education, etc. But those are discretionary audits. It's at the discretion of the AG. And on the one slide, which is the one pager difference between AOPI and performance auditing, we'll be able to see exactly. Previously, we used to call it audit of performance information, and we've now changed the terminology to audit on predetermined objectives. And typically, the reason was it was difficult for people to make the change between what is performance auditing and what is audit on predetermined objectives. And you'll find that the audit on predetermined objectives, which for this we can say performance information, is part of the normal auditing that we do on an annual basis. It is focused on a specific area within the annual report, which we refer to as the annual performance report. And we look at compliance with respect to all the regulations, as well as the quality of the information that is presented. And your normal financial or regularity auditor will be able to do that. With regards to performance auditing, it is a specialized area, and it's done on specific themes rather than on specific audits, and it focuses on the three E's, which is economy, efficiency, and effectiveness, and it's done by subject matter experts. So they become professionals in a specific area by doing their research, etc., and using specific techniques. And you find that a performance audit therefore takes much more time than just doing a normal audit on the predetermined objective, which is done as part of your financial audit. Then on page 5, I've just explained the 3 different opinions. And ideally, what we're trying to say is that when the Auditor General talks on clean administration, it means unqualified financial statements. It means that on predetermined objectives, there should be no findings in the audit report. And on compliance with laws and regulations, there should be no findings in the audit report. So in other words, we are saying there should be material compliance with all the prescripts with respect to predetermined objectives, as well as with compliance with laws and regulations. Similar to how we audit a set of financial statements, we have a materiality limit and threshold, etc., is the same concept that we apply with regards to the audit of predetermined objectives. So in other words, what we are saying is that there could be misstatements, etc., but as long as it's within materiality, it's fine. So we're not saying there should be no findings, but they shouldn't be at a level where it gets reported in an audit report. So it's a very similar concept to your normal financial statement audit. Then on the next slide, which is the definition of audit on predetermined objectives, it is an annual audit, so it's done annually, and it's also done as part of the normal statutory audits that we conduct on the financial statements. And we primarily look at 3 areas. There's a document which I'm not going to go through, but it explains all the technical terms which I've distributed, technical indicator descriptions. And you'll see when we talk of an indicator, what does an indicator mean? What does a target mean? What does a predetermined objective mean? What does a program mean, etc.? So basically, we look at the annual strategic plan and the annual plan, and we also compare that to the quarterly report that the department and the entities have to submit on a quarterly basis to the executive authority. And we also look at the annual performance report, which comes through right at the end of the year. And we focus on the consistency of those documents throughout the year. In other words, are the predetermined objectives that were set out in the approved strategic plan the same as what's being reported on a quarterly basis and what's in the annual performance report? Are the indicators the same, the target? There should be 100% consistency. And then we also look at, focusing on the area of predetermined objectives, we can break that down into 3 areas. The one is a compliance aspect. In other words, has a strategic plan been tabled on time? Has it been submitted to the executive authority timely? Has the entity complied with the requirement of reporting quarterly, etc.? So that's the compliance aspect. We then look at the usefulness aspect, and we look at the reliability. Those 2 areas we will discuss in quite a bit of detail, the usefulness and the reliability in the next few slides. In terms of the Public Audit Act, there is an expectation and there's a requirement that we must report on the audit of predetermined objectives. And the PFMA actually expects that entities will report on predetermined objectives. And this requirement applies to any entity irrespective of whether the AG is the auditor or the public sector entity has what you call authorized auditors or private auditors. Then looking at legislative requirements for planning, budgeting and reporting of predetermined objectives, basically these are the only areas that we look at. We look at the PSMA, Treasury regulations, the public service regulations, guidelines, instruction notes, practice notes issued by National Treasury. But the critical one with respect to predetermined objectives is the framework, which we call FMPPI, Framework for Managing Program Performance Information, and the new framework that was issued in August 2010, which all departments and entities are now complying with. Basically, the new requirements there are that you need to break down your annual targets quarterly, and also you need to compile annual performance plans, whereas previously you just had to compile a strategic plan. Then when it comes to the AGSA strategy, we find that we started traveling on this road from around 2005, where we adopted a phased-in approach. So initially, in the first few years, we just focused on, are there systems in place, are the targets clear, well-defined, etc. But it was mainly just for management's information to try and sort of bring it up to a certain level of maturity. However, it had to come to a stage where we now had to escalate the reporting of these findings. And therefore, the approach that we've taken for the past 2 to 3 years now is, although ideally there's an expectation and we would like to go to concluding and to expressing an opinion on predetermined objectives in the audit report, we are restricting that opinion to the management report. And only findings that are material get escalated into the audit report. So basically, what I'm trying to say is that if there is any finding in the audit report, and if you are to now determine whether this entity or this department received sort of an unqualified conclusion or an adverse or a disclaimer or a qualified, you'll be able to conclude by saying if there are findings in the audit report, you know definitely that that area was not unqualified. If it was unqualified, there would have been no findings in the audit report. So that's the approach that we've taken. And the reason being that in order for us to express the opinion on all spheres of government, we need to ensure that there's a certain level of maturity before we are able to do that. Because, I mean, you shouldn't have a situation where the majority of reports are sitting in the category where there's serious findings. We should, I think, give the entities time to sort of come up to a certain level. However, if we look at the general report, etc., which has been tabled now, we will find that there is an improving trend when it comes to predetermined objective. It is an area that has improved quite considerably over the years. Then the next page, which is page 10, I think this is about the most critical slide for this committee to take note of. And basically, if you look at the oversight, it's a function that needs to be exercised throughout the year. I mean, we are now considering the annual performance plan and the strategic plans for departments for the next financial year. And basically, what we are trying to do here is to give some insight into what should the committee really be looking at to ensure that you can really give value-adding recommendations to the departments. The one is to ensure that there's a clear correlation between the national outcomes, the 12 outcomes, and what the departments and entities are trying to do. They should ideally try to show us a picture as to where do they fit in with that. And also linked to that will be the National Development Plan, which was mentioned in the State of the Nation address. So that's also something that we look at. The other is the Lekhotlas, etc., that take place. Because that is where your policy is derived from. I mean, there's no entity or department that doesn't have a specific mandate or is there to perform a specific function. So there has to be some correlation at that level. Thereafter, when we look at then those priority areas, etc., get developed into a strategic plan. Now, when it comes to, for example, a public entity or a constitutional institution, there's also a legislative mandate in terms of their own enabling act, which will set out what is the mandate of that entity. We also focus, when we're auditing this area of predetermined objectives, we also look at the act to ensure that the service delivery talks to what's in the act. It's no use having all the practical information as to what's contained in the policy documents, but what you are actually doing is not relevant to your mandate. So we also do that correlation. And I think for the committee's purposes, going through the next review cycle now, there has to be a clear alignment between the strategic plan and the budget. In other words, for the money that the department or the entity is receiving, what are you actually doing with that money? There has to be a correlation, because when it comes to the end of the year, you can have a situation where you've spent 100% of the budget, but you've achieved 20, 30, 40% of your strategic objectives, and clearly there's the correlation is not there. So I think that's also something that the committee can take note of. And also during the BRRR processes as well, which happens around September, it's also something that can be looked at in terms of of informing the future strategic plans, etc., before they are tabled for the next year. And what we expect is that during this review process, as we go through the slides, we will see exactly when we talk of smart, when we talk of well-defined, what do we mean? And this, and we've also given a document, the handout, which talks of, it's entitled NXJB, which talks of performance indicators and performance targets. What does the acronym SMART mean? What is specific? What is measurable? And it's all contained in that FMPPI document that I spoke about earlier. And the best people to review these strategic documents and the annual performance plans are those that are not directly involved in them. Because what might appear to be obvious and make sense to a person who's compiling the document may not be useful to a person externally who's reviewing the document. Because the person internally knows exactly what I'm doing. But a person externally needs time to understand, tell me what you are doing in a way that I can understand. And therefore you will find that the SMART criteria, and when it comes to indicators, the well-defined criteria, it's usually people who are not involved in the process who pick up that this doesn't appear smart to me, or this doesn't look well-defined to me. Because to a person who's compiling it, it's obvious to the individual. And so therefore we try to assist in that area during the audit. And what we have noted as well is that if you look at previous audits, and it comes through in the general report for 11-12, we think that at least at the national level, we are seeing improvements in that area when it comes to the planning area, in terms of your indicators being well-defined and your targets being smart, specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. Because if you don't get the planning area right, it is very difficult then to get your reporting correct. Because if your planning is not clear and unambiguous, when it comes to the reporting, we as auditors will not know that is exactly what you meant when you did your planning. And also the entity will not know throughout the year exactly what is meant by that in order for them to go and collate and get the information. So what tends to happen is that you just get whatever information you have and hoping that will address the issue. But in most instances, it doesn't. It's just that there was no thought process that happened. But as we're saying, that by and large, that area has improved in terms of the planning phase of the on the predetermined objectives. So the committee needs to be involved right at the beginning, throughout the quarterly reporting as well. The committee should get these quarterly reports, basically to check what is the progress on a quarterly basis against what's in the annual performance plan, and to see exactly what are the corrective measures that the departments will be implementing in order to achieve the targets, and also to see what is the correlation of your quarterly achievements versus your spending. So you'll be able to see upfront that is there a risk of unauthorized expenditure or is there a risk of underachievement, etc., in order to make recommendations. So that's the implementation of the in-year reporting. And thereafter you have the in-year reporting. Once the actual performance information has been presented for auditing, the committee is made aware of what is the audit outcome, and thereafter to utilize that audit outcome to improve the next year's cycle. And on the next page, this gives now the detail to what I mentioned earlier in terms of the three areas. We look at compliance, we look at usefulness and reliability. When focusing on compliance, what are we looking at? We talk of existence and timeliness. Basically, when you talk of existence, now when you talk of compliance, you are looking at compliance with treasury regulations and with the PFMA, which expects you to have a strategic plan, which details your predetermined objectives, your indicators, and your targets. So do you have that? If you've got that, is it being tabled timelessly, and is it being presented to the executive authority timelessly? Now, for a public entity, for example, it must be with the executive authority 6 months prior to the beginning of the next financial year, or on a later date as agreed with the executive authority. And then there's also other requirements in terms of 7 days before tabling, what is the requirements, etc. So we look at those areas. And on compliance, in this specific portfolio that we are talking about, justice and constitutional development, if you look at the previous year's audit outcome, it was only SIU that had a finding in this area. There was no other entity, or even justice wasn't, there were no exceptions on the compliance aspect. When we talk of usefulness, this is really your planning and your in-year monitoring throughout the year. It's broken down into four areas, which is presentation, measurability, relevance, and consistency. In terms of presentation, is it done in a manner that is prescribed by National Treasury? And that you will find in the FMPPI document. It's taken for granted that it's not law or it's not a regulation. However, if you do not comply with the template from National Treasury, it will be very difficult for you to convince anyone that you are really reporting properly on predetermined objectives. So we have found, departments comply with it, you could say 100% in terms of the exact headings and what is expected. Public entities, there are some unique situations, and this, so they can actually tailor it to suit their requirements. So that's the area of presentation. The measurability, it focuses on two areas, which is your indicators and your targets. Now, how the information flows is that you've got all your strategic objectives, and then you've got your programs. So for example, Department of Justice, there's five programs. You'll have a strategic objectives under each of those programs. Thereafter, you translate that into indicators, which is a bit more information in terms of what you want to achieve out of the program. So you'll have a program in one line. You'll have maybe four or five predetermined objectives. Then per predetermined objective, you might have 5 or 10 indicators. So you know, you are now breaking down the predetermined objective to a much more workable type of indicator to say exactly what are you going to be doing to achieve those objectives, which will ultimately achieve the objective of the program. So when it comes to the indicators, we look at well-defined. And the terminology information has been given to the committee on the handout. Basically, what we are saying there is that, is it unambiguous? So anyone reading that indicator should know exactly at a high level what this indicator means. Thereafter, you take that indicator, and now you will have a target to measure whether you're achieving what do you want out of that indicator. So for example, your objective might be to have 5 meetings for policy coordination, etc. Your indicator will be to ensure that you have the 5 meetings, and what do you want out of the 5 meetings. Then your target will specify exactly how will you go about meeting that indicator, and thereafter you have your actual performance, which we will look at from a reliability point of view. So that's your measurability. Relevance generally is not an area where we have significant findings. If there are, they'll be very rare, but usually we do find that what the entities are doing and what the strategic plans, etc., they are relevant to the mandate of the organization. So relevance, we just try to identify that what you've identified as your performance areas are actually what you should be doing in the first place. Then we look at the consistency aspect, which I spoke about earlier, that is your annual performance plan, strategic plan, quarterly reports, and your annual performance report, all exactly the same in terms of what you've set out to achieve right at the beginning of the year. There is room for amending or for changing, but not your actual objectives, etc. You can refine, for example, your target. If you find that, you know what, this is not really measuring what I want to do, but you need executive authority approval for that. And that must happen quite early in the financial year, maybe around halfway in the financial year. Because what we find, although not really in this instance, but some entities leave it for very late in the year, and then you don't get the approval, and thereafter you have to default to what you've originally submitted. And you find that that's not what you're measuring yourself against throughout the year, and you have problems not providing the information. Then, so that is mainly your planning and your in-year monitoring. Then you have the reliability aspect, which is now your actual performance. And basically what we look at there is validity, accuracy, and completeness. In other words, what you are reporting on as your actual performance against that planned target that you set out, is there supporting documentation to substantiate what you are saying you've performed? So is this to come with the documentation to say, well, I said we will be doing this, this is what we've done, and there's the documentation to substantiate that. We do not question underperformance. In other words, if you've underperformed or you've overperformed, you need to have a variance column and to explain exactly what was the situation. We will not say, well, you've underperformed, therefore we have an issue with that. We look at performance and at an overall level when it comes to meeting your actual performance, but not at an individual level. So that's the validity aspect. The accuracy aspect normally comes where there's complex calculations or calculations, for example, percentages, numbers, etc. Then we have audit procedures to determine that what is being reported is accurate. And the last area is completeness. What you will sometimes find is that entities actually underreport what they've actually done. So we do cover that aspect as well. So the validity is there to cover you from the risk that you are over that you are overstating, and the completeness aspects comes in from the risk that you are understating. So we do cover both angles when we report. On the next slide, we set out the audit approach. Basically, in summary, we look at initially, is there a system to report on predetermined objectives? Are there policies? Are they clear? Are they aligned to the treasury requirements, etc.? That in itself will not give rise to an audit matter in the audit report on its own. However, if that is the critical root cause for other audit findings in terms of usefulness and reliability, then that will be escalated into the audit report. So, for example, you may not have a policy, but you are doing very well in terms of, in some unwritten way, you've got everything there, but not in terms of a policy. You've just got some documentation which documents your processes and it's being done, although it's not approved or in some very fancy format, but it is achieving what ultimately you want to achieve. It's fine. It might be an audit finding in the management report, but in itself it will not give rise to an audit finding in the audit report, because there is some way of getting the information. Then we look at what you spoke about, the measurability, relevance, presentation, and consistency of the performance information. Then the usefulness, the reliability area. So that's pioneering our audit approach, which I've already covered earlier. Then we come to the reporting. As I mentioned earlier, that you will not find an audit opinion or an audit conclusion in the audit report. That remains in the management report, which is given to management. However, if you find findings in an audit report, you can make that assumption that definitely the opinion or the conclusion, we rather refer to the word conclusion, that's referred to in the management report has not been an unqualified conclusion. So basically, there were certain areas which led to at best a qualified conclusion. We don't refer to the term opinion when it comes to predetermined objectives. So that's basically the approach that we're following, and even for 2013 it will be the same approach in terms of our reporting. And if you look at the audit report, the findings are basically broken down in the areas that I've mentioned earlier. In terms of the compliance, the usefulness, and the reliability. As I explained, the various criteria that we apply, and we actually use the same criteria to report in the audit report. However, there's one word of caution that we should note, in the sense that the audit outcome is unlike a set of financial statements where you look at every material account balance or class of transaction when you express an opinion. When it comes to predetermined objectives, we will select a specific program, or in the case of a public entity, for example, a specific or fuse two or three specific objectives. In other words, we do not audit that annual performance report or the strategic plan 100%. There are certain thresholds and in terms of our methodology that we apply, we try to cover, or we have to cover, more than 50% of the budget. So in other words, if two programs cumulatively give you more than 50%, then you've actually performed what you should. But we also have to guard against the element of predictability. For example, you might have a department where one program on its own is more than 50% of the budget. And if you only apply that principle, then the department knows exactly you're only going to audit me on that one program. So you put in all your efforts on the one program and you ignore the other three or four programs that you have, because you know the auditor is never going to test you on that. So we do bring in the element of unpredictability. So we won't audit you on that program, but we may just add another program in this specific financial year to ensure that what you are doing for that one program, you're actually doing that for all your other programs as well. So the audit outcome is based on the programs that you've actually audited or selected for testing. But when we select that program, we do 100% on that program. So for example, at Justice, if it's court services, we will audit court services 100%. We will look at program 1, 3, 4, etc. at a high level just for the indicators and targets, but not for the reliability part. We'll be looking at actual performance, for example. That would only focus on the program that we've selected. And there's various criteria that we apply. One of them is that it must be linked to your core mandate, and it must be quite a substantial portion of your budget. So we have to bring in that element of unpredictability. So therefore, the message that we're trying to give here is that, as a committee, that when you're applying these principles, apply them to the entire annual performance plan or strategic plan, not just to selectively to a few programs which you might consider to be critical, and then ignoring the others, because those others could be factored into the audit, and then you might find that there are findings in those areas. So on the next slide, I spoke about usefulness, and I'll just link this. The next few slides, I'll just link it to the audit outcomes of the previous year. We spoke about the compliance aspect. It was just SIU which had findings in terms of the timely submission of the strategic plan to the executive authority, and they also had inconsistencies between the strategic plan and the annual performance report. So the correlation was not there 100%. In other words, there may have been some indicators and targets in the annual, in the strategic plan, not in the annual performance report, and there could be some that are in the annual performance report, not in the strategic plan. So there was a consistency issue, and there was a time frame issue in terms of SIU. No other entity within the portfolio had findings in the compliance aspect. However, when it comes to usefulness as well, we think that the portfolio has done quite well in terms of having well-defined, verifiable indicators and the targets being smart. However, please take note of the caution that I just mentioned earlier in terms of the auditor looking at specific objectives, programs, etc., and not looking at every one of them in detail. Because if we change the program, we could find that there might be a regression in terms of that criteria. Then again, when you look at reliability, it is only SIU, I think, that had findings on the reliability aspect. In other words, what was actually reported at the end of the year could not be corroborated by valid, accurate, and complete documentation. And also that major variances between your plan and actual performance, there were no reasons provided for the variances. However, when it comes to additional matters, there were a few entities which had findings on that. Now, the additional matter does not affect the overall conclusion. In other words, if you pick up an audit report and you find that under predetermined objectives, the auditor says that there were no significant matters to report, you can assume then that the conclusion was an unqualified conclusion. So similar to on a set of financial statements, you have emphasis of matter. When it comes to predetermined objectives, we call it additional matters. And additional matters could be just two. The one is that there could be material changes to the annual performance report being made by management as a result of the audit process. So basically, what does that mean? It means that when the auditor comes in, he audits the validity, accuracy, and completeness criteria in terms of the reliability of your actual performance. He then tells you, he or she then tells you that, you know what, I think you've either under-reported or you've over-reported, or there's certain errors in here which you need to go back and rectify. So management then goes back, rectifies that information, resubmits it for auditing, and then the information is found to be in order. So the initial performance report that the auditor received on the 31st of May contained material corrections which have to be done as a result of the audit. So we will highlight that. However, it does not impact then on the opinion or on the conclusion that we've expressed in this area. The other area is at an overall level, where greater than 20% of the planned targets are not achieved. And you'll find last year it was Justice and NPA which actually had findings in that area. When it comes to material adjustments to the annual performance report, it was Justice and SIU which had findings in that area. So the achievement of the planned targets is done at the overall level. We take the entire annual performance report. Obviously, the program that we've audited, we know exactly what was achieved, what hasn't been achieved. And for the programs that are not audited, we look at management's assessment and we come to an overall conclusion on that. Then what we are seeing on the next page is what are the root causes or the generic root causes which should be addressed. Whether it applies, if it applies to the portfolio, then it should be addressed. If it doesn't apply, then make sure that these root causes are actually or you have controls in place to ensure that these root causes never occur. The one is that specifically when it comes to the planning and the quarterly reporting, if the oversight responsibility is not exercised, in other words, if the accounting officer or the CEO does not take personal accountability for this area, you will probably have a negative audit outcome. It is critical that at the highest level within the organization, the performance information or predetermined objectives is taken seriously. If it is not, you are more likely to find that you will have serious findings, specifically when it comes to your indicators and your targets, which is your planning cycle, and in your in-year monitoring, which is your quarterly reporting. The reason being that if that is not addressed, you're definitely going to have issues on your final reporting. If you address that initially, you are more likely to find that because of the corrections and the revisions, etc., that you make throughout the year, your annual performance report you've got a greater chance of that being correct if you exercise the oversight responsibility throughout the year. Now, when it comes to planning, the oversight needs to be exercised prior to that financial year because your planning happens before the commencement of the financial year. So during the entire strategic planning process, the involvement of the accounting officer is critical. Then you will find that, as I mentioned, that the further away you are from the document, the greater chance you have of actually picking up that the indicators and the targets do not appear smart or well-defined. And there you said that in instances where you do find findings, that internal audits are not involved in the strategic planning process. Now, internal audit is an independent function. However, the internal auditor does have a role to play in giving the document a review so that before the external auditor comes in, the internal auditor may have already highlighted that, you know what, there are certain areas here that they are not smart, they are not well-defined, etc., and you might have a challenge when the external auditor comes in. So it's an opportunity for management to then take the internal auditor's recommendations into account prior to finalizing the strategic plan. Then the last area is to do with the reliability, where either supporting documentation is not available or it is not presented in a way that is easy to understand in order to corroborate the reliability. Again, the role of internal audit is critical there, and we have found that this year there are in quite a few environments that the internal auditor is now involved during the quarterly reporting process, where on a sample basis the internal auditor picks up the information to ensure that what's being reported as the actual performance for each quarter, there is evidence to substantiate that. It basically serves two purposes. The one is that when the external auditor comes in, management knows that the information is there. Because if the internal auditor had looked at it, so the information definitely is there. So it addresses the one risk that the information is there, there should be no limitation of scope. And it also addresses the other area that you've got someone independent of the process now verifying that what you are reporting is actually supported by documentation. During talking on the root causes, I would have addressed some of the recommendations. The one is the oversight responsibility. The other is an action plan process just to ensure that all previous audit findings are on an action plan document. And the action plan must, similar to how you, to the acronym SMART, the action plan to address any audit finding must also be SMART. There should be a person assigned the responsibility to ensure resolution. There should be a time frame to that. It should be specific, exactly who will be doing what to ensure that ultimately the audit finding is addressed. And then training and development of performance management staff. Then on the next page, if you don't have a policy, then you should, management should ensure that they do actually have standard operating procedures. Again, if you reflect on last year, you will find that if you look at the SIU, the audit report, you will find specifically a finding on this area, that there were no standard operating procedures or there was no policy, etc., to drive this area. And I think that was the only audit from what I've looked at within this portfolio that had a shortcoming in that area. The other critical one here is that the individual performance contract should be aligned to the organizational objectives. Obviously, you may not find 100% alignment, but if the performance contracts that are signed with individuals is not aligned to the organizational performance, you might find that the organization is not performing very well, but you've got huge performance bonuses on the other side where staff performance is actually at a very high level. So there is miscorrelation or there's a non-correlation. And that is also something that must be looked at. There should be not total correlation, but there should be at least some sort of a correlation that if the entity is overachieving, you will expect a high number of overachievers at an individual level. If the entity is just at an achieved level, you don't expect to have, you will still have overachievers and you'll have non-achievers, but you won't expect too many overachievers at an individual level. So we can use that to correlate between what performance bonuses are paid and what is the actual performance of the organization. Then on the last slide, basically we talk of the role of internal audit and internal audit. I've spoken about internal audit. And when it comes to the audit committee, there is a requirement that performance information reports must come to the audit committee on a quarterly basis as well. We do find usually that financial reports come through, but not in all instances performance reports are coming through. But I think we didn't really have findings when it comes to the justice portfolio last year, and I think that is being sort of addressed within this portfolio. But you'll find that if these documents do not come through on a quarterly basis, the chances are that you will probably have findings when the external auditor comes in, because you don't have any independent person actually just giving some input into the documentation that comes through throughout the year. That's the presentation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Isak. Honourable members, we thought it was important for us to be aware of and mindful of the processes and criteria used by the AG in arriving at their findings and conclusions, and hence this presentation this morning. We thought it would be important to help us as the responsible oversight body in order to carry out our tasks. If you take into consideration Terence Nambembe's recent report and his comments, where he lamented the fact that similar reports had been published in the past and seemingly very little or nothing came of them. So this briefing this morning must be viewed in that light. I'm not saying that we have fallen down. I'm simply saying that we need to view it in that light. I saw Mrs. Schaefer, Prof. Ndabandana, Ms. Bulane Majake. For now, Mr. Jeffrey.
You may or may not be aware of the fact that I've had some serious concerns about the SIU management for a while now, and I noted that it comes up time and time again in your comments. Could you give us some more information as to what exactly? I'm particularly interested in details regarding findings where the information couldn't be verified. You said that there was information regarding the reliability that couldn't be verified. What details did that refer to? And also in additional matters, you referred to adjustments being made to the annual performance report where the SIU was also mentioned. If you could just give us more detail on that, please.
Prof. Ndabandana.
Thank you, Chair. We must congratulate Mr. Isaac for his quality of exposition. But having said that, Chair, could you kindly explain to us what leads to the phrase no audit opinion on audit reports, please?
Okay.
Thanks. Just want to thank you for this report and really trying to share with us as to what are important processes in terms of audit, and also highlighting the role of Parliament in terms of engagement on the whole process of auditing. And indeed, we have already expressed concern as Parliament in terms of the BBR report, where you find that already approvals have been made, the plans have been approved, and when the reports are actually brought to us, it almost feels like it's just a matter of just talking about them because of the fact that Treasury has already approved. And I think the timing is very important in terms of when do we engage as Parliament in order for us to truly exercise our oversight responsibility and make inputs into what types of plans are supposed to be adopted. Including the types of budgets that are supposed to be allocated, and that actually talks to the whole issue of performance. One other thing that I think is very important is to look at where you converge with Treasury as Auditor General. In terms of where we want to get to with our national priorities as a country. Because indeed it's very important for us to actually come up with systems and arrangements, because as a country we've got very beautiful systems. The machinery is there. But is this machinery really working for us in order for us for it to manage to take us where we want to get to? And in this regard, my concern would be how you really truly converge with Treasury in terms of the kind of plans that are approved by Treasury and how you're going to be monitoring, because you're part of monitoring as to whether it's what is actually planned for taking place and whether it's actually been spent in the manner in which it has been budgeted for in accordance with the plans. And where I feel there's a bit of a gap is how you engage Treasury in order for you to be in the position as Auditor General to influence Treasury so that when the medium-term expenditure framework process is taking place, already the Auditor General's position is there, and the Auditor General also is quite fully aware of the medium-term expenditure medium-term expenditure processes are taking place. Just to be in the position to really deal with what is contentious in terms of issues within the country. I talked about the national priorities. I may actually also bring forward the triple challenges that we continue to have in South Africa: poverty, unemployment, and inequalities, that I think is the responsibility of all the government departments to really manage to make inputs into in order for us to manage to get somewhere as a country. And risk assessment also is very important. You've actually indicated the role of the internal auditors. And I guess probably this is where that could be answering what I would actually want to ask as a question that has got to do with the warning signals. We have government departments that are sometimes not spending too much. You find that there's a lot of money that is not spent when the need is still huge. If you want to actually comment also on that, how you do your warning signals, thanks.
Chair, thanks. Maybe just before I ask Mr. Isak some questions, just a general point, but I would also like him to hear, maybe not directly linked to his portfolio. Chair, the situation with the food, I mean, we're meant to be in cutting back, and it is ridiculous. I mean, you know, there was a pile of food there. They've just brought in some more food. It's just incredible wastage. And I really think that you, as chair, should look at ensuring that we do we need all this? We don't need all this food. Do we need any food? It's just a waste of money. I mean, how much is that costing? Anyway, that's a general point. But I just thought that the Auditor General's office should hear it as well. Well, it's just because it came in, and chair, I saw the expression of shock and surprise on your face when more came in. But look, my first apologies for being late. I was at another meeting. My difficulty with the presentation, I read it last night, is that it's a generic presentation. In your input then, the last bit of it that I caught, you were then raising specific points on justice. It would be useful to have more detail or something more justice specific. Obviously, the broader approach is useful. But what I, for one, would want to know is, and we do see your report on the justice books, accounts. We see the scope of reports and their comments around what should be done. But what our job is to perform oversight over the department and the other entities to ensure that they get an unqualified audit. What I would like to know is, what must they do to get a qualified audit, and who is responsible for them not getting a qualified audit? Because, you know, so every year we look at your report when it comes to the annual report process, and we get a response from the department around what they're doing to correct the issues that you've raised. But they still get an unqualified audit. Still get a qualified audit, rather, or an emphasis of matter or some problems. It would be useful to have more detail given on where the problems are, early warning signs, for example, and to be hearing from the department who's responsible for correcting this, because it just seems to roll on year after year. We know the problem with third-party funds, and that's taking its time. I mean, we're now, I think, back on the issue of legislation to create an entity or something. But yeah, it just carries on. And then the one, I don't know if you covered it, so the point I'm making is it would be useful to have had your oral comments on justice in a documentary form, so that we've got a report on what is the Auditor General's office saying about justice on these particular aspects that you've broadly gone through. Maybe you weren't invited to do that, so it's not your, if it was the principles, but think it would be useful, Chair, if we could still get
well,
that.
Let's talk about the intention.
Yeah.
Is that will come later. I'm not sure on which day.
Okay.
But it's fine.
Okay, yeah. It says the oral comments were useful, for example, the references to SIU and things. Then, just, I don't know if you covered this, it was a bit that I missed. The performance audits you've got under discretionary audits, performance audits, e.g. infrastructure. Now, I just sort of picked up on that one because one of our problems is the state of court buildings. I don't know if you've done any audits on infrastructure in the department, particularly the court buildings and the problems with the maintenance of infrastructure, because you have a, as you'd know, a situation where if the recording equipment is not working, then the case can't proceed. If the air conditioner is not working, then the trials become very difficult, and so on. And if the toilets aren't working, whether they be judges or magistrates' toilets or the public toilets, that also becomes difficult. So I don't know if you've conducted any performance audit on the infrastructure of court buildings, whether you've considered that, who determines what the discretionary audits are that you conduct. Thanks.
The presentation is meant for the audience of a portfolio committee, so therefore we didn't make it too specific, and that's why I tried to bring in the oral comments to try and make it more relevant to the portfolios. But we've taken note for that, so in future we will incorporate some of the oral comments into the presentations. With regards to the SIU, we did communicate the outcome of the SIU in a bit of detail during the BRRR process. We came and I think we discussed and we commented on the audit outcomes, giving some insight into the audit outcomes, as well as proposing some recommendations and obtaining commitments from the committee. However, when it comes to the two specific areas that you mentioned, is the reliability and the adjustment. On the reliability, what we are saying there is that the actual reported performance that was relevant to the specific objectives that was selected could not be corroborated by valid and accurate documentation. So basically what we're saying is that, and the threshold is 20%, as you can see on the slide. So for more than 20% of the information that we required to corroborate what you're actually saying you've performed versus what we are seeing in terms of the evidence, there was that non-correlation. So we are saying there was a material limitation in terms of us verifying the information compared to what you're actually saying you have performed. And that's when I mentioned right up front is that the role of oversight is critical. It could be related to the vacancy, the senior level, etc. That could be an indicator. And also what you will find in the audit report as a root cause is really the issue that there is no documented policy, etc., in order to guide those who are involved in the process, so exactly what is expected of them to ensure that the information is readily available. When it comes to adjustments, the SIU is a bit of a unique situation. If, for example, you look at justice, the adjustments that were made actually then led the department not having any critical findings on the audit report. When it comes to SIU, despite all the critical findings that are in the audit report when it comes to reliability, etc., the adjustments that were made were picked up by the auditor, were made, but there were still issues within the report that could not be corrected because there was no documentation to substantiate it. So what we're saying is that despite the adjustments being made, it still led to audit findings being raised, which were factual findings. So it's a bit of a unique situation. Very similar to, for example, you find that on a set of financial statements you have a qualified opinion, and then you will still have material adjustments that were made, which had they not been made, the qualifications would have been more. So it's very similar in that to that scenario, that there were corrections made to rectify some of the auditor's issues, But there were also corrections that could not be made because obviously the documentation was lacking. So it's very similar to that concern. When it comes to no audit opinion in the audit report, basically what we're saying is that we use the word conclusion when it comes to predetermined objectives. The conclusion, in other words, if it's unqualified, we would say that no significant matters have been identified. When it comes to qualified conclusion, we will say exactly what, but all of that information lies in the management report. So only the finding gets escalated into the audit report, not the actual conclusion in that area. And as was mentioned by the member, just to link the two, the primary reason for going with this phased approach, there is no standard internationally. Like you have, you know, auditing standards and accounting standards, etc., which tells you how to deal with specific issues. When it comes to this area of service delivery and predetermined objectives, there is no technical standard. These have been developed over time, and it still requires various interventions. The interventions that we have embarked on is that we are quite closely engaged with National Treasury, with DPSA, with DPME, because they actually monitor the achievement of the national outcomes, etc. So because of that, there's various things that must still happen before we can say that we are at a level of maturity. And if the decision is taken to bring in the conclusion into the audit report, it will be done at all three levels of government. And we know that the biggest challenge is at the local government level. So until all of that is addressed, we will still, at least for TRAP 13, you know, the Auditor General issues usually an annual directive, and for TRAP 13, which is this financial year, we are still adopting the same approach that we followed last year. In other words, the conclusion will be in the management report. It's just that the findings, if they are material, they come into the audit report. So it's not that there's no conclusion on this area. However, ideally, as I mentioned earlier on, was that we would like to go to a situation where you have an opinion in the audit report, similar to how they have an opinion on the financial statements. I've taken your comments to account, but as I said, that the interventions are happening, and we also have, or we try to, and in most instances we are successful, having quarterly engagements with ministers, with accounting officers, etc., to raise these warning signals. In other words, there is this, you've already spent 50% of your budget, and your actual achievement unaudited is only 20%, that there's something here that's not correlating. Or because of, you're not managing your finances properly in terms of paying your creditors on time, it's having this knock-on effect in terms of your performance for the next year, etc. So during our engagements, we do bring those matters to the meetings to sensitize the principals in that area. We've taken note of making the presentation more specific to the portfolio. We will do that in the future engagements. Linking third-party funds, etc., that's out of the scope of this, of the purpose of this presentation and meeting. So, I mean, I wouldn't like to go into that area now. And then the infrastructure one, I have taken note of that. I'm not sure what the focus will be in terms of the infrastructure audits which have been identified, but I have taken note of that comment, and I will propose. But there is a committee that sits, which is chaired by the Auditor General, which determines which performance areas we should. Just for a case in point, we know that during last year's budget vote debates, etc., CETA was mentioned many, many times. We went back with that proposal. The Performance Assessment Committee, I think it's called the Performance Assessment Committee or the Performance Audit Committee, they sat back, they looked at what were the concerns. A report was issued back in 2003 already. The concerns are exactly the same. So we will just tell the department, you know what, these things are coming up again, you need to fix this. It's no use going back and doing a performance audit and coming back with the same findings. So therefore, we have taken note of that, but we decided not to go and do a performance audit again because exactly the same issues have come up again. So these are considerations that we take into account as we scan the environment and we But it is. There is a public report which was issued in 2003, and I know that there was a request. I think even this committee mentioned it, and the minister mentioned it a few times. We have taken that back to the office, and the performance audit committee has sat on that, and they said, you know what? I mean, if you look at time frames, you look at efficiencies, you look at turnaround times, etc. The same, what we are experiencing now is exactly what was raised previously already.
We've communicated that to the minister.
We have now also mentioned to the responsible minister for CETA that these issues are coming up again. Mm-hmm. So at ministerial level now we are asking them to put pressure. We are asking them to put pressure amongst their colleagues now to ensure that the pressure gets put down to the entity, to rectify the situation. So what you're saying is that we take this comment seriously and we go back and we do propose any specific performance audits, and infrastructure is one of them that I will take back.
Not very to the Mr. Isak, but maybe it would be useful to if you wrote to the chair of the public service portfolio committee, drawing attention to the issues raised relating to CETA currently. In the last, I think these issues that Isak is referring to came up in the budget review process, wasn't it? Refer to those issues, attach a copy of the report that he's speaking about, the 2003 report, and request that they urgently take the matter up with the Minister of Public Service and the CETA itself directly.
Yeah, good idea. And don't forget that we have 10 CEOs in 10 years.
The 2003 report, as I said, just reminded me, is an AG report.
It is on our website. It was tabled as part of the general report in 2003. But it can be very easy to make my future.
Sorry, Ms. Kilanama Jaffe, and then Ms. Jaffe.
Thanks, Chief. I do still believe that there's a question that I've asked that you haven't really engaged on how the AG actually assists us in realizing national priorities. And I'm saying this because if you look at the amount of money that's spent annually, and you look at the challenges that continue to exist continuously year by year, you realize that we need to have a system that's going to really help us to manage to deal with challenges that face the country. And of course, now we're talking about justice. And if you look at the national priorities, for example, if you just talk about access to health, access to education, it still becomes, in a way, a justice matter because it's on basic socioeconomic rights. And then you talked about predetermined objectives, and you said what you look at is compliance, you look at liability, which is good, and then you look at usefulness. And I tried to actually go back to usefulness to look at in the manner in which you have reported what you regard as usefulness. What page is it, by the way? I didn't open it. Because usefulness is what will actually help us to really manage to deal with the challenges, because we cannot as a country continue to have all of these challenges when year by year we have plans, we have money that we spend, but year by year we continue to have the same level of usefulness here. It says they're supposed to have performance indicators that are well defined, that are verifiable, and I want you to talk to me in terms of realization of national priorities in that context how do we verify that the plans that we have are really going to manage to talk to the outcomes in a manner in which we articulate our priorities as a country?
Honourable Member, we have to segregate the function of management and the executive versus the audit process. There's one thing that we as auditors will not do is to criticise, or we basically, what I'm saying is that we audit the information that's given there. We try to bring in the other dimensions in terms of what are the national priorities. We do get the documentation. We are now going to align our audit methodology to the National Development Plan, etc. So we do bring in all of that. If there's an element that's applicable to the department that's not there, we will bring it to the attention of the department. Ultimately, we cannot question exactly what goes into the documents, etc. Our audit focuses on what's actually being reported there. From the relevance aspect, as I said, we can bring in some elements in terms of what you're actually saying you are performing is not relevant to the environment, is not relevant to the country, etc. But our audit is primarily focused on what is the information that's presented, having our limited knowledge in terms of what we would expect in there. The responsibility for scanning the greater environment and etc., and then the coordination between various departments, etc., we have, from an audit point of view, we have all those elements. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is that within this cluster, I will have conversations with SAPS, etc., NPA and all those other entities, because they form part of the cluster, to see that are there transversal risks that we are picking up, and is there an element within those environments that impact on my audit. So I think a similar approach should then, I mean, there are the clusters meet regularly, etc., so there should be a similar type of thought process. But our overall conclusion is limited to what the audit process is. Beyond that, you know, at another level, what happens, it's something that really, I mean, we do not question policy and things. We audit basically what's there, and we try to bring in what we know of the environment into the audit process, and through that we communicate that to management if there are glaring things that can be done to improve the way that these areas are reported on. But what I'm trying to say is that at the highest level, the overall responsibility rests with management to ensure there's that correlation, and then linking the audit, linking, because not all outcomes will impact on every department, etc. There are critical ones that will directly impact on justice, for example, to make South Africa safe, etc. Those are critical ones that justice cannot get away from, and we will make sure that there's correlation there. I mean, the healthcare one becomes a bit more distant for us to really make that correlation. There might be an indirect correlation, but that is not something that we will directly look for to ensure that there is that correlation.
Mr. Jeffrey? This is going back to the infrastructure question that, Mr. Isak had said there's a committee that decides on it, that he would take it forward. I think one of the problems is that infrastructures continue to be built, new courts and things. But a concern from the committee is the ability of the department within the budget constraints to keep the infrastructure of the existing resources functioning, and that's the sort of concern.
Thank you, sir. May I ask Mr. Isak a general question? When you hold the road shows, do you invite departments?
The AG has various roadshows. What we do is that we brief the department or the accounting officer, etc., on their specific portfolio. Similar to how the AG approaches it, we do it more at a local level. The AG does it at a much higher level. So we use the same information, the same terminology, etc., but bringing it closer to the. But we do not have a roadshow, for example, where the AG will go to the DG of Justice, etc. The AG has his ministers' engagements one on one. He has where he has a collective engagement as well with all the ministers, etc. So the AG does it at that level. We do it mainly at portfolio committee, DG level, the scope of our invitation, etc. But the AG also, he has a roadshow with each and every portfolio auditor. So in other words, he will go and visit every business unit, and he does it for PFMA throughout the country, and in PFMA he goes to every province as well, and he gets the information. So what the AG actually speaks is exactly what a trainee auditor will be able to tell you as well. So that is how the AG then builds up that information.
If there are no further comments and questions, it's for me to say thank you to Mr. Isaac. This has been most informative. We're still looking forward to that other report on the department, which is a little more detailed and covers the aspects that Mr. Jeffrey wanted information on. We'll liaise with you as to when that's going to happen, all right? Honourable members, we have one item which is outstanding from yesterday. Dr. De Vere and his team are desperately trying to leave because they don't want to hear all this. And we understand why. We understand why. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Did the officials come specifically for this meeting?
No, they were here on other matters. No, it's a fair question. I mean, there's how many of them? Three of them. Yeah, flying down and, yeah. No, they were here on other matters, and they found out about this presentation and asked if they could sit in. Yeah. Honourable members, Magistrate Miles, you've read the report, and all the apostrophes are in place. Right stuff at the end. The Honourable Debbie Schaefer is proposing that the report be adopted. No one is seconding it. Prof. Ndabandaba seconding. Any objections? Yes, Mr. Jeffrey. Yes, show me where.
Apostrophe S.
Yes.
You put another S. I thought you just put another S on.
You do. No. You do. I'm impressed, Mr. Jeffrey. No. I'm. No, in English, Mr. Jeffrey, there is an if there's an S at the end of the word, you can put an apostrophe S.
Another S.
Yes, another S. In fact, you must. Yes. Spilana Majake?
Yesterday when we discussed the matter, there was a suggestion to go and check on the communication from the minister and to marry that with this report. Has that been done?
There's no pages numbers here. Under 10, the committee resolved to recommend to the National Assembly that it confirms Ms. Miles' suspension from office on the grounds of continued ill health. There's no reference to the minister there. Yes, that was the previous. Okay.
So, following on, what did the minister ask us to do?
Yeah. asked us to confirm Mrs. Miles' suspension from office on the grounds of continued ill health. Right.
Then, Chair, my only thing is 10 and the recommendation are repeating each other. Should 10 not come out, I mean, this is today, and it would be having considered the report, take out 10, having considered the legal opinion and the report on the suspension of Magistrate L. Miles, the committee resolved to recommend to the National Assembly that the recommend that the National Assembly confirms the suspension of on the grounds of ill health.
So the only change on the recommendation would be having considered the
basically taking 10 and 10
out,
that's the recommendation.
Right, 10 comes out and then
but make it the recommendation, except we don't put the date because this is the date
fine.
To adopt the report.
Having considered the legal opinion and the
report
comes in, report
on the
and the rest of it stays the
yeah.
same. All right. Mr. Sibanyoni, I hope you're going to take us further.
Yeah, to try just to say, let us concede to say there is some slight difference of views. Some of us say when the word says ends with an S, you don't put another S.
Oh, let's not argue about that.
But let
really?
Us leave it at the.
All right, please.
We are Justice Committee, lawyers don't agree.
Yes, we know that. Very okay. As amended, are we okay with it? Good. Thank you very much.